Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today, we're going to explore the arts and education. Later on, we're going to meet the creator of the Dick and Jane Project. It's a program that brings together students, teachers, and musicians to create songs based on student writing. Joining us now is Mimi Chenfeld. She's a teacher, writer, poet, and dancer. She's the author of Teaching in the Key of Life and Teaching by Heart. Mimi has taught in Columbus since 1970?
Yep.
Who's counting? How many times have I said that?
Her specialty, 1970s.
Her specialty is creativity and fun. In fact, she's known as the queen of fun, and for that reason alone.
The queen of funds.
Funds, we wish. She does not dish out any funds here. For that reason alone, she's a frequent guest on All Sides, and we've tried to have you back every year now that I've been running the show at this time. Just before school starts, or right when school starts.
So. School starts too early in Ohio.
I agree.
You know, I still have my New York head, and school always started after Labor Day.
Yeah, I always remember the smell of leather and worms on the streets from the rain.
Rain and little leaves falling. Yeah. Hello, why are we still going to school with gardens flourishing in summer and people in bikinis?
Well, they go to school. They wear those in the dead of winter, so out of school. So.
It's really, it's inappropriate to begin school in the summer. Can we have a movement about this?
Is that just like a thing because it's different than what it used to be, or do kids learn better in different climates?
I think they learn that the adult world is full of betrayals, is what I think.
It's not really summer. Well, you know, even if school didn't start, the athletic programs would be starting there.
And all the rehearsals for things, the choruses start,
the marching bands have been working at it.
Yeah, but those are the kids, and you know, your two superintendents talked about exciting. Those are the kids who are excited because they'll stay up all night. They'll come in the summer. They'll come freezing. They'll come sick because they want to play ball. They want to be in the band. They want to start the drama. You know, those are the activities that you know, compel them. So they don't care.
You know, and just there's a lot of kids that can't wait to get back to school because that's where their teacher is that cares about them. That's where it's warm and safe and where they're going to get food every day. You know, when there's snow days, everyone's all happy. But I think often about the kids who now are stuck at home without a parent at home to take care of them, without adequate food and that sort of thing. So
you could not have said that better. You could not have said that better, because this is my whole life. School should be a place where children feel safe and warm and welcome, and great things are happening, and brightness and nourishment of mind and body. This is my whole life is this. I tell people I am not leaving this earth until I see this happening everywhere.
My guest is Mimi Chenfeld. She's teacher, writer, poet, and dancer. You know, you're welcome to join the conversation as usual. Talk about dating myself.
Yeah.
Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can tweet us at Ann Fisher WOSU. You know, I remember back in the olden days going to school, and I remember it was the school marm at the front of the class, and it was very structured and very boring, and the classrooms were sort of grayish and brownish, and they were like big green blackboards or big black blackboards, very dusty from the chalk and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember a lot of color. I remember the alphabet going across the top of the blackboard, but that was about it. You have to admit that things have changed a lot.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, you can't compare these two eras, because our kids are so programmed, you know, now they're programmed to have something happen fast. They need fast. They need Twitter. They need tweet. They need pay Facebook. They need screens to change. They need three different kinds of things going on a television screen. I mean, this is what they see. I mean, when you imagine what children see now compared to sitting in a room like you're describing, you turn on the TV set and you see somebody speaking, and there's a box and somebody else is speaking at the same time. Then the interviewer is speaking to the two of them, and they're both communicating. And then on the bottom is going the scores of football and baseball. And then on the bottom of that is the weather. And the bottom of that is the headlines.
A lot of information.
And on the top of that, and we wonder why we say the kids are ADD. you know, who could, and then there's music underneath all of it. That's just, so our kids are not, our kids want color. They want change. They're fast kids. That's their energy now, which we don't have to discuss as good or bad. But so sometimes just to stop and say, here's a room full of flowers. Here's a board of rainbows. Here's music that will energize you and excite you, and it will go with our social studies. Here's a story that will make you sit down and be fascinated. So, our kids grow up in this hectic hyper world where everything is going so fast. So this old setup where somebody's standing in front of the room in a dull, boring way is just going to be a really hard challenge. I don't think that can happen anymore. Maybe it's still happening. But I think you talk to the two superintendents, and they were just saying, how do we excite the kids? How do we get them? And today's paper, there was a wonderful big article about what they're trying to do with middle schools in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And that was exciting to
Tough
me.
Tough age.
Tough, I say middle school teachers are the most committed in their own way, their own unique way, than any other group, because most people cannot stand middle school kids. Even if they're their own kids, they can't stand them.
No comment.
They're a breed.
You can't make me talk.
Listen, they're a breed unto themselves. So to reach middle school kids is a special, special gift. And I think that they're starting to work on it to see how can we set up this environment so that these kids feel warm and welcome and safe and wanting to come to school. And that's a tough one, but they're trying, and that's great. I always say middle school kids are toddlers with hormones. I do, because it's exactly the same. They want to be cared about. They want to be loved. They want to be recognized. They want to be hallowed. They want you to share with them. But they've got all these hormones that make them cool. We're really cool.
Right.
Cool.
And you are so uncool.
I'm right.
Meaning me.
All right.
But
underneath it, they really are dying for this. So the teachers have to get through that layer of resistance. And they do it. Many of them do it.
Steve from the west side of Columbus, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Hi, Mimi.
Hi, Steve.
I have a question for you. Why aren't students allowed to take field trips out in the country anymore? Because there's so much science as well as theology and everything else, like mathematics and geometry of the trees and leaves and the physics and everything and the chemistry. I used to go to a rural school. We used to go out on field trips, and I had this teacher named Irving Weller, and he would... He'd imitate bird calls, and he showed us all the trees and everything, and he worked for General Electric and taught science and stuff like that. But kids don't take field trips anymore in school.
Steve, what you just described are the most wonderful experiences for kids. And, it's interesting. Let me just give you a little, just aside from that. Right now in education, one of the biggest movements is, hey, nature, hey, the outdoors. And this is just exactly what you're saying. Is we can learn. William Blake said to see a world in a grain of sand. And if we teach kids wonder, and we teach kids to observe, and we teach kids to enjoy and appreciate and respect and celebrate just the natural, miraculous world around us, that's the greatest gift we can give kids. We can't give them anything greater than that. And I agree with you. Those are the most valuable trips, the simple trips. You don't have to go fly to Washington and get parents' permission and stay overnight. I'm not knocking that. That's great. But just go around the corner. Go 20 minutes away and have the best day you've had. But a lot of the field trips are getting cut because of budgets.
Right. The transportation costs are the most expensive.
That's one of the reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Any way you can figure out, PTAs funding it, or businesses adopting a school and helping them with that, that is one of the greatest things you could have happen.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Mimi, we have two songs here, and one of them is Little Richard's Itsy Bitsy Spider, which you don't want to talk about that?
No, I do. I wanted a surprise. A surprise.
Okay.
Sorry. So you want me to talk about, you want to use some music, and you want, one of the things we were talking about is kids learn in so many ways. They can learn from the worksheets. They can learn from lectures, but they learn in many. They learn from music, and Ben will talk about that later. And we always talk about that. They learn from movement and drama and story and creating things and improvisation. They learn many, many ways, not just one basic way that we test on, and that's when we decide if a kid knows something or doesn't. And half the time, the kid may not know it, but does a good test so and gets a good grade. But so we were talking about how can we use fun music. I always like to say, and I was in the libraries this summer. I did about 12 library programs with the children and just had fun playing around. And one of the ways is starting with something that's familiar. The kids already have a familiarity with certain songs, with different stories, and that and honor that. Honor the familiarity. But so many times our kids are smug, and they go, well, I already knew that. Well, we've done that. Oh, I've just done that forever. Boring. So, you know, you've got to be really strong in how you present and share with kids. And you're a role model. You know, whether you're a parent or an aunt or a neighbor or a friend or a teacher, you're a role model. How you present an idea and how you play with an idea is a way of showing kids how to use ideas. And if you're limited and you're stiff and you're narrow about how, you know, like, oh, we already knew that. Oh, well, let's do something else. We've already done that. Then that's what's going to be conveyed to a child. A smugness. We have a very smug culture. So you've got to be strong because the kids are going to put you down if, you know, they're going to first say, oh, no, we already did that and we don't want to do it again. Then if you do that, then and you can just be a wimp and just, you know, melt away, or you can be really fierce in your mind and go, well, how can we mess with this idea? So they see that ideas are not, you know, strict, limited entities. So just to be playful, I wanted to use, you know, not honoring nature and honoring animal books. So we started with the dinosaur song, but then I said, we did dinosaurs. So, and I have kids from all ages. I had a kid 4 days old and a great grandmother, like 99 years old. In one of the sessions, it was like, life and death all in one room, 100 people. So many children of all ages. So I said, you guys, there's a tiny little animal that's in so many stories. It's teeny, teeny. Now, we did dinosaurs. They were huge, huge enough. So, and I put my fingers together. I said, it's a teeny little animal. And I just did the movement to the itsy bitsy spider, just the movement. And, of course, every little child, even the four-day-old kid knew it. The four-day-old kid joined him. And the little fingers went up, itsy bitsy spider, you know, down came the rain and washed the spider out. And everyone, I said, let's all sing it together. And I could see the older kids, like the third and fourth and fifth grade kids, like, oh, no, I don't believe this. I said, come on, let's just all do it together because we know. So, and the whole group, even the 100-year-old grandma was doing it. So they all did it and they loved it and we all clapped. Yay. So I said, do you know the song? And they went, and then even one little three-year-old just started the whole chorus off. She went, itsy-bitsy spider. And then everyone sang it. And then I said, then I just reached my hand out in an imaginary way as if I'm holding a phone, as if a phone rang. Imaginary. So wait a minute, everybody, can you be quiet a minute? My phone just rang and I have nothing in my hand, right? So I'm going, you quiet down. You. I said, hello? Oh, Richard, hi. How you doing? Oh, I'm in the Northern Lights Library here with all of my friends. Yeah. Well, gee, Richard, we just sang it. I don't think they're going to want to sing it again. I don't know. Oh, hang on a sec. And I just hold my hand over the pretend phone. I go, hey, you guys, this is my friend Richard. And, you know, he loves spiders. Oh, my gosh, he just really loves spiders. And he's very hyper. I don't think he's on his Ritalin. I think he did his
this
medication.
Is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really off his medication. But he loves spiders so much. Do you think we could do his spider song? I know you just did it, but you think maybe again. And he's so bouncy. Could you just keep bouncing while you do it? So you can do the movement to it, but just keep the bounce, you know, just keep it. And is that okay with you? And everybody goes, yes. So the whole place goes, yes. So I take my imaginary phone and go, okay, Richard, everybody says they'll do it. So I blasted on.
Okay, and here's Little Richard.
Here's the beginning of it. But of course, they didn't.
We have to take a break. That's Mimi Chenfeld. That was Little Richard. Mimi Chenfeld before that. She's going to return with us. If you have questions or comments, 614-292.
Kicked you off the program.
8513. We'll never kick you off. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we'll talk with actress Pam Grier about life as an African-American action figure and her memoir, Foxy. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Be sure to join Ann tomorrow morning at 11 for a conversation with OSU President E. Gordon Gee. That discussion is Tuesday at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher. 69 degrees in downtown Columbus. Mostly cloudy skies this morning, sunshine this afternoon, and a high of 78. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 57 degrees. Sunshine for Tuesday and a high of 82. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, a low of 62 degrees. And more sunshine for Wednesday with a slight chance of rain and a high of 84. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about teaching creativity. How do you do it? Can you teach creativity? Mimi Chenfeld thinks you can.
Well,
she does it every day.
But you can't really teach it. You just have to be it and do it.
Let people
and share
it.
Because I've sat in on the most uncreative courses on creativity. You know, that really, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just got a C in creativity. Oh, I flunked my paper on play, you know. You know, my paper on joy has to be rewritten because the teacher said it was unacceptable. You know, so you can kill anything. But you know, one of my, just to go back to the Little Richard thing, I have these four little rules for creativity, which I think I may have shared over the years, but they still are valid. And rule one, or I call them nudges, is what else? Not good? You can write it down. What else? And the minute you say what else, your brain starts going into, you know, really good activity. What else can I say about this? What else can I do? So it isn't like you're smug. And so the Little Richard thing was like, what else can we do with the spider to make it fun and to add on to it? What else? So we added a spider dance. We added what the spider might be thinking. We added we added Anansi the spider and Charlotte. You know, so it wasn't just spider. We just played with it. You play with an idea. So what else? And that we can do with anything, like talk about Steve going out to the nature walk. We can kill a trip to nature. We can kill it. We can kill anything, you know. What is it, for instance, let's just talk about colors. What is your favorite color, Anne?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
You know, I've never been able to nail it down. I think it's yellow.
Wrong.
Okay.
So, you know, we can kill. I mean, we just kill it. You know, like I ask you what you think about something and you tell me and I say, this is not right. So, I mean, even if it's a wonderful question, like a senior high school student told me this is why this is so strong in my mind. She said that they read a book and the assignment was write a paper on what you think was the most amusing part of this book. So she wrote this wonderful paper, and the teacher said, you flailed. You guys, unacceptable, because the teacher did not think that that was an amusing part of the book. So it talked about betrayal.
So no matter how well written it might have been, it didn't matter.
But why do you say, what do you think? So this is just going
trick
back.
Question.
What else really helps you think more and more and more? What if? What if? Mm-hmm. You know, what if Richard is just fanatic about spiders and he can't keep it just, you know, the familiar little way, it's he has to add his, and what if right now Anansi came in the room, Anansi the spider, what else could we say about him? What else could he do with his mischief making character, his legend? So what else, what if? And that adds on. Show the idea. I think this is one of the best things. How do you show ideas? So many ways you can show them in words, show them in songs, show them in movement, show them in maps and charts, and we all learn differently. So the more ways you can show an idea, the more people will be able to pick it up and say, I got it. So, and the last, of course, is fake it. If you can't do it, just do it anyway, because 90% of what we do in life, we're faking it anyway. Mm-hmm. We're pretending we can do it, but we really are winging it. And anyway, these four little things. So that little Richard was under what else? You know, what else can you do with spider? And then they're always adding vocabulary. They're following directions. They're using memory. They're using repetition. They're using language. So everything you're doing is language. And all the incidentals are valuable. So it isn't just the worksheet.
You hear more and more about how they're trying to incorporate language and reading and writing skills into other parts of the curriculum now, in science and math and all of it. You know, it sounds like a good idea.
And
because that's what?
I am old but immature. Can you believe? I don't want to even use words to say how ridiculous it is to think that language is separated from anything.
Who ever separated it in the first place, right?
Do you know
right?
how many...
Who did that?
I've been saying this, you know, hello, you know, good morning. Daytime is light, nighttime is dark, sky is up.
But you know why they're doing it? Because they're achieving more when they do that.
Of course, because you're connecting. Yeah. You're not disconnecting things that are connected together. This is just driving me crazy in this country. I mean, I tell you, I don't want to die until we get some basic, simple thing. Of course, how can we have science without reading and language? And social studies, all of social studies. Well, I say this with the arts. You know, I teach this course every summer, arts across the curriculum. How do we teach subjects without the arts as part of them? How can we do the Westward movement? How can we do space studies? How can we do early pioneers without the music, the stories, the diaries, the journals, the maps? How can you do Lewis and Clark without reading about them and keeping their diaries and their letters? I mean, everything is language. And once we get that, it will help the children because you're helping them connect and not disconnect and give them meaning.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Mimi Chenfeld. She author, educator. We're talking about teaching you can't teach creativity.
You can teach creatively.
Teach how to teach creatively. She's been teaching in Columbus since 1970. If you have a question for her, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the Facebook page, and you can tweet us at Ann Fisher WOSU. Okay, I'm not going to give this next one away. There's
Tootie Time. Hip-hop, hip-hop. Tootie Time. Let's do it. A Tootie Time, a Tootie Time, a Tootie Time Time.
I could have come up with Tootie Ta. That's Jack Hartman's, it's a popular hip-hop Tootie Ta song. So you can get that on YouTube if you want to check it out more. But
well, you know what? A couple of years ago, the kids told me to, I was in the schools because I do artists in the schools, and like the kids in the different classes, when we talked about movement, they were on to this Tootie Ta. But the Tootie Tas that they were on to that I heard, were, to me, they weren't that much fun. But the kids liked them, you know. It was a thumbs up, and that you follow the directions, and it's repetitious, and it's patterning. So if somebody says, what are you doing? Do not say you're having fun. Say your listening skills. Say small and gross motor skills. Say patterning, sequential learning, following directions, cooperative learning, spatial relationships. I mean, you're doing all that in most activities. But this one, the kids really liked. So when I heard it, you know, it was okay. It was like, tootie-ta, tootie-ta, tootie-ta. And it was like, oh, no. This is kind of, and then I met my friend Jack Hartman, and he said that a lot of the songs he's putting into good rhythms because the kids are doing it. But he said, this is going to what else can I do with something? So I found Jack's hip-hop version of it. And I'm telling you, the kids knew it. So going back to familiar, mm-hmm. So tootie-ta. You know, I just put my thumbs up and the kids go, oh, tootie-ta.
Really?
And some of them will go,
I've never heard of it before.
No. So, oh, the kids, no, they taught me. You know, I came to teach and I stayed to learn. So they taught it to me. So I just put my thumbs up and go, gee, what's that? And they'll go, tootie-ta. They'll just go, tootie. I just put thumbs up. They'll know it. So I go, oh, I say, how does it go? And then they'll do the, you know, the straight version. Tootie-ta, nootie-ta, elbows out, tootie-ta. So you keep repeating and adding on. And I go, gee. And then I could do my Little Richard shtick and go, just a minute.
Yeah, with the telephone again, the imaginary telephone, right?
Jack, boy, I'm really getting phone calls today. How about doing my tootie-ta? Oh, no, the kids just did it. Well, what else can they do? They can dance in between and they can add on to the movement. So just to make it more fun and going back to the excitement. So it's familiar, but it's done in a different way, in a fun way and a surprise way. It's surprising them because as soon as they hear that first beat, they're like, whoa, we're going to have a blast.
Right.
And then everyone's in it, the 100-year-old grandma, the 4-day-old baby, and everyone in between. And so you have fun, you're learning, you're doing repetition, you're doing language. I mean, everything is in the one little activity.
You mentioned artists in the schools.
Yes.
On the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Artists in the Schools preview night is Tuesday, September 18th.
I think it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
It's always been Tuesdays, but I think they've changed it to Wednesdays this time.
And it's at the Veterans Memorial?
No, it's not there. I think it's at Fort Hayes.
Okay.
It's at Fort Hayes.
We'll get that, and we'll post it on our website, because what I have right here is all wrong.
It's from last year.
Yeah. Well, it's not even there.
Unless they changed it back.
I don't do information. Yeah.
I just do inspiration.
Yeah.
Well, GCAC is sponsored probably. At one point, it was the most successful and largest program in the country of this kind, and maybe now is second. It's Artists in the Schools. And through the Greater Columbus Arts Council, there's a big catalog of, you know, artists and arts groups that have gone through the process of, you know, getting evaluated and approved by the GCAC and are available to schools to hire for one day, half a day, a week, you know, depending on their budgets, and bring the arts into the school. So they have, like, you know, ballet med is in there, and the jazz people are in there, and dance groups are in there, and musicians are in there, and drama people. And it's the most fabulous visual artists, most fabulous group.
What happens at the preview night?
The preview night is a big showcase night.
Oh, okay. So anybody can go?
Community people can go. Teachers can go. Okay. Schools can send people, and they just have a great time. They have like 3 or 4 rooms that are every 15 minutes, another performing artist will do his or her little sample of what he or she does. And then there's rooms of exhibits of information about the artists. And it's one of the most, it's just a wonderful, wonderful event. For anybody from community, you can bring them. They don't, you know, it's mostly schools, but, you know, you might have organizations that want to say, we want to bring a music person, we want to bring a drama person.
Like a preschool or anything like that.
Yes. So I've been in it since the beginning, which I'm very, you know, happy and lucky to be doing, been with schools all over the area in all grade levels. So I know it's, and I think I must have mentioned this once, Mary Sue Garlinger does movement and movement workshops, and she was in one school for one half a day with the program. And a child wrote, "Dear Mary Sue, thank you for coming today. You made me happy for the rest of my life."
Wow.
Just a true quote. It's a great program.
It's important, you say, to keep joy and fun and delightful learning experiences in the classroom. The bottom line, the fact is, that's, who would argue with that, but these standardized tests, they aren't going away.
That's right.
They're refining things, and I think that some people would agree they're getting better at using them and understanding it, but bottom line is, these big fat tests with number two lead pencils are not going away.
I'm glad you said number two.
I don't know. Probably, they're probably doing them online now for all I know. But anyways, so. So how do you marry the two?
Right, because okay. First of all, we've been, you know, this has been years of, you know, being the little person with the finger in the hole in the dike. Of course, the water's coming through, but the finger's still in the hole in the dike. But they, as you say, they are kind of changing it a little bit. But the point is, Anne, that if you strengthen teachers to have the confidence, to have joy, have the way you describe what school should be at the very beginning of the program, if you strengthen the teachers so they're confident in themselves that we are doing language, we are reading, we are doing vocabulary, then you have children who are excited about learning, who feel success, who are eager to come to school. And then when you throw in, listen, standardized tests are coming up, let's make sure we all know, you know, whatever. We've got to get certain things. We need to get. We really need to do our best. They are ready. But when you start the day one, here are your pre-test exercises because the tests are coming. Countdown 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks, and that's what we're doing. You have scared, tense, throwing up kids, insomnia kids, kids who don't want to go to school, stressed out kids. That's ridiculous. So within the context of a joyful environment where they're learning every day in many ways, not just one way, and they're feeling good about themselves and confident that they can learn and they want to learn, then within that, whatever informational stuff that the standardized tests are going to include, then you can say, okay, let's work on this, guys. But you've got a relationship with the children of trust and safety and reassurance. And I think they'll do better. They'll learn much better. The top-ranking schools in the city of Columbus, Indianola. And Indianola is an arts integrated school. And the kids learn. If you go in there, you just say, this is the greatest school ever. So the kids learn through movement, through music, or Duxbury School. But their scores are high because they're good learners. And they're excited about learning. And they keep the information. I think it can be married. But it's when teachers are harassed and scared. And if your kids don't test well, you're this and that. And the society is so hard on the teachers, and you know they don't see the joy, they don't see the joy, they don't see the fun and fundamentals. They just see the dementals.
That's Mimi Chenfeld. We're talking about creativity in schools, and how to marry them with the standardized tests that have.
It's a shotgun marriage.
Taken over as a shotgun marriage, exactly. You got to do it. Mimi's going to return when we come back, along with Ben Shineberry. He's the creator of the Dick and Jane Project. It's based here in Columbus, and we'll be talking about that when we come back, and we'll hear some music from Ben Shineberry's band, too. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, bring your appetite for food in conversation. We begin a week of interviews about food and cooking with Chef Grant Achatz. He co-founded a Chicago restaurant famous for its avant-garde food. Ackett's lost his sense of taste for a while after being diagnosed with tongue cancer. He's now in remission and has opened a new restaurant. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn on September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres by Chef Chad Lavely will be paired with a selection of beers from four of Ohio's best breweries. Brewmaster Matthew Barbie from Lancaster's Ronk Mill Brewery will co-host this exclusive event. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets and look for information about the Granville Inn Lodging Special. That's at WOSU.org/chefs. And be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 11 until noon for a conversation with Ohio State President E. Gordon Gee. That's tomorrow on All Sides at 11. Sunshine today, a high of 78. Clear skies tonight and a low of 57 degrees. And sunshine for Tuesday, a high of 82. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, a low of 62. More sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 84. There is a slight chance of rain on Wednesday. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Well, the train makes a chug-chug-chug sound, whizzing through the station as it whizzes around. There's the train's traction bars give more power, and it gets faster every hour, and it gets faster every hour.
Today, the topic is arts and education and how the element of joy and fun can actually contribute to a child's confidence and academic performance. Joining us now is Ben Shinneberry. He's the creator of the Dick and Jane Project, right here in Columbus. After graduating from OSU with a degree in human development and a minor in education, Ben decided to explore the alternative possibilities within the education world. He became an administrator for a YMCA after school elementary program and a teacher for a child care center. And he created the Dick and Jane Project, which brings together students, teachers, and musicians to create songs based on writings of young people. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
And that last song, the A Train Ride to the Zoo song,
correct,
is an example of what you do.
Exactly. The song we just heard was written by a 7-year-old boy who actually lives in Melbourne, Australia. And I found his writing about a year ago on a poetry website. And I fell in love with it mostly because, you know, the title, A Train Ride to the Zoo, and I immediately thought of my friends and the local band Trains Across the Sea. And I thought that it would be a perfect song for them to then transform from the poem that Sunuru Dikembaru, that's the boy's name, mm-hmm, to transform that poem into a song for everyone to enjoy and listen to.
Did you have to get his permission?
I did, yeah. We actually still keep in close contact with his parents. And Australia is almost has more views on our website than the United States because it seems like the family is so excited and passing the song around to all their relatives and friends.
So what do you use the song for? What's its relationship to the Dick and Jane Project?
So the main reason why we use song for really two reasons. One is to inspire the kid and the young person to tell them that they're able to write, that they have legitimate words that the world wants to hear. And the other part is for the adults of the world, for the grown-ups, to realize that even though, you know, these young writers are 7, 8, 9 years old, they still can write words that can strongly affect and impact our lives and make us realize that, you know, that crazy little 8-year-old running around the swimming pool actually has a pretty interesting perspective on the world.
So you work with the kids to write the lyrics,
yeah,
and then you put them to music?
Yeah, it's really what it's evolved into now is a collaborative process where really a day or two we spend with the kids just inspiring them to be the writers that they are and telling them that they have a perspective that we want to hear. And we start off, you know, just really getting them to believe that. And then they turn that around and they write a poem or a song or whatever they're feeling. And then I give that to a band around the city, you know, Trains Across the Sea. There's been many others, the Dewdroppers, Ghost Shirt.
So it's not just your band. You give them to other bands, too.
Yeah, all bands. Really, I actually don't even have a band. I've actually been using all of the local bands
okay
around the city.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. To yeah, to get the opportunity to, you know, to dive into these kids' works and really, you know, and I always tell the bands that it's a process for them too. And that's what I hear from all the bands when they do a song, especially for the first time, they don't know what to expect at first. And then when they start getting into it, I mean, it's just fun to see them really connecting with the lyrics and connecting with the words and even the young person. 'Cause then it's usually a collaborative process where there's two or three more meetings between the kid and the band. And instead of the band, you know, putting a grade on the kid's writing, saying this fails, they're able to say, well, we like this part, we didn't like this part, let's work on this, let's change this. And, you know, and the kid can do the same thing. The kid can say, well, I like the drums, but maybe it can be better. I like the guitar, but maybe it can be changed a little bit. And that way we're, instead of grading the kid's writings, we're working with them. And they're doing it voluntarily as well. It's, you know, it's a wonderful process.
My guest is Ben Shinneberry. He's the creator of the Dick and Jane Project. It's based here in Columbus. We'll have a link to their website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Also, that Artists in the Schools program is Wednesday, September 14th. It's from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Arts Impact Middle School. The event is free and will showcase the talents of the artists participating in the Artists in Schools program. We can post all that information on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. So don't worry, just go to our website and we'll have everything you need to know about the Artists in Schools and Artists in the Schools and also the Dick and Jane Project. Why Dick and Jane? Why the name? Where'd it come? I mean, of course, I grew up with Dick and Jane.
Definitely. It came from, I was riding the bus home from work. I used to work at a child care facility downtown, Children First. And I worked in a toddler classroom with 18 months to 3-year-old. And one of the parents donated a Read with Dick and Jane book for our library. And I thought it was the funniest thing because no toddler is going to be interested in, you know, a Read with Dick and Jane book. So I took it home with me and I was riding the bus home. And this was actually when I was starting to learn how to play guitar. And I got home and just started strumming some chords and I had the book next to me and I started singing the words and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. This actually makes this book sound, you know, compelling.
I wish we had a cut from that.
and then one thing led to another and then I found an old shoebox full of writings that I had gotten from my work at the YMCA and I pulled one of them out and did the same process, and I thought, wow, this kind of works. This might be going somewhere.
The Dick and Jane Project, now you're seeking 501c3 status still?
We actually received our 501c3 status a couple weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So what does it mean? How is it going to operate?
Well, right now we're pretty much getting all our ducks in a row. For the last 7 months, we've been kind of putting out what we've coined now our pilot program, where we've worked with 6 or 7 elementary schools and middle schools. So now it's basically figuring out how we can reach the most kids effectively and just putting out fantastic songs for everybody to listen to.
When you talk about getting the kids excited to do the writing, how do you do that?
There's a lot of different ways. My favorite thing to do is to, on the very first day, have everybody sit down in what I call a listening party. And basically, I'll play 10 different genres of songs. We'll have rap, we'll have country, we'll have hip-hop, basically running the whole thing and having the kids rate what they like. And that really gets them talking about, you know, the music and the lyrics. And really, my favorite thing to get the kids to write is to tell them that we want to get their song on the radio. And they kind of look at me funny and they say, you know, really? And I say, well, really? And that's kind of what I've made my goal is. And when you tell those kids that, you know, that their lyrics have the chance of getting on the radio, they grab a pen, they grab a paper, and they run to the corner of the room and just start writing down, their song. And it's a really amazing experience to see, especially, you know, as Mimi was talking about, in the age of standardized testing, it's hard to even find the opportunity to get kids to write things that they actually care about and things that they want to write. It seems like we're teaching our kids how to write things to get it done, to write a report, to write, you know, your spelling words 5 times. And, you know, kids never get the opportunity to learn how to write something they want to write. And it usually doesn't happen until they, you know, become an adult, and all of a sudden you've missed that opportunity to, you know, to really know how to express yourself effectively.
Mimi?
Yes, you know, I wanted to just throw something in here, and Ben, it's very exciting what you're doing, and it's wonderful to bring the music people and the kids and the words together and share. But I just wanted to say one thing that hit me, which is we have two things going. Kids are very product-oriented. What is the product? Will I get on the radio? And that's tricky. So your challenge, I think, and I think it's a fabulous challenge, is how do you share this so that they love the process, they love the doing, and part of it is, gee, maybe mine will get on the radio, but that may not be the only part. That part of what you're doing is the joy of the doing for its own sake, which is what I think is so important in our culture, which is so product. As you say, you know, why do we do things? Because we hope for this outcome. But if you widen the outcome so that it involves the joy of and the fun of just doing it, because it's a wonderful thing to do.
I like the idea of mentioning the radio because it reminds kids that there are such things as radios. Yeah. Since that's what I do.
You would be surprised. Yeah,
it's not necessarily
where most
a given.
Kids get their music,
although
yeah.
we've stood the test of time. Yeah, yeah, but
but you get the point.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let's listen to another. You sent us another cut.
Definitely.
Ben.
Believe that one's Fair May. Yeah. And this was also musically arranged by the band Trains Across the Sea. But the origin of this writing is actually interesting. There's a coffee shop, Cafe Kerouac, look at that on High Street, and they have a bathroom where they put all of the writings and all of the pictures that they find in the used books that they have. And one of these, Fair May, was a writing by an unknown writer from, all we know about it was from grade five. And it's been hanging in the Cafe Kerouac bathroom for years. And when I started this project, I thought, you know, let's see what we can do with this one. And I thought it turned out pretty good.
Let's hear it.
This
Fair
is
man.
The writing on the bathroom wall.
This is the writing on the bathroom wall.
Fair May is here with blossoms sweet and strews them. Richly at our feet, so let us haste with smiles to greet Fair May, Fair May, Fair May, Fair May, Fair May, Fair May, Fair May is here with blossoms sweet, so let us haste with smiles to greet.
That's really pretty. I'm trying to it's about the month of May.
Exactly. And it's a shame that we're 7 months away from May, but it can
we
still
can dream.
True. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Bright month of May. Yeah.
Was that
a
was
promise
that,
rare to those who sow with fervent prayer, early, late, and gladly wear this easy yoke?
And it's fantastic. I mean, even just to nobody would have even repeated those lines had it not been, you know, for the song. And I mean, I just think that song has so much to do with the way that people perceive something. And when even just, you know, just some simple music is put behind a kid's words, all of a sudden your ears perk up and you listen a bit more and you're able to appreciate the writing for what it really is.
My guests are Ben Shinneberry, creator of the Dick and Jane Project here in Columbus, and also Mimi Chenfeld. She will be with us as well. We only have about 5 minutes left, so if you have a question or comment for either of our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ben, what kind of feedback are you getting from the bands that are doing this?
The bands absolutely love it. And really what most bands say, especially after the first time, is what an incredible exercise it is for them. Because most bands, when they go into creating a song, they have two jobs. They have to create the music and they have to create the lyrics. And I think what the Dick and Jane Project does, it alleviates that one aspect of writing the lyrics. They don't have to, you know, worry about it being perfect. You know, they're being supplied it, and then they're able to connect with the other person who's writing the lyrics. And so they can really focus just on the music and really put, putting justice to the lyrics that were written. And like I said, you know, I really stress to the bands to get connected to the lyrics and really get connected to the child. And they, I mean, every time they're blown away and surprised by the experience and what it does for them, not only as musicians, but, you know, just as people who see the world.
Mimi, what do you think about bringing hardened musicians in to the classroom to work with the kids on something like
wonderful.
This?
It's wonderful. Our, you know, when we're talking about language, we have kids who can recite the lyrics to 15 minutes of a rap song, and they know every single word. We can't even understand them half the time, but the kids know them, and then go into a class and get a worksheet in language and can't figure out what, you know, like, this is not relevant. But I have the gift that I, if I hear a rhythm, I can learn the words. So learning, and we, how many of us learned our whole religion through music? We learned our prayers, our psalms. I mean, this is ancient, and poems were originally sung. We always say, I sing about this, the song of myself, that way back in history, poetry was sung by minstrels. So what Ben is doing with this project is just really bringing together, going back to disconnect and connect, connecting to make meaning for the children. It's wonderful.
And there's such a disconnect right now in education with kids and music, especially when I was working with the YMCA. One of my biggest frustrations was not being able to talk to the kids about the music they were listening to, and which, of course, was their number one passion. And that was a big problem. It was hard for me to be an effective role model, you know, to when a kid brought up his favorite song, to not be able to talk about it with him. So I felt that as a way, you know, I needed to figure out a way to merge these two things together to make, you know, their education meaningful to them.
So what's next? If people want to know how to, I mean, what's the next step in this process? You have your charitable status now, 501c3. What's next, Ben?
So really, we're just lining up workshops for the next school year.
And you do it with the schools, or?
We work with schools. We work with after-school programs. And we're even looking to do individual workshops, looking for teachers that have that one kid that would just benefit completely from the Dick and Jane Project. And those are the kids that we're starting to target right now, as we learn the process, because this is only a year old, and it's something that nobody's done before. And, you know, as we go on, we're learning as we go.
And this is not your day job.
This is, well, it's not my day job, no, but it takes up most of my day.
Like so many passions do. Yeah. Well, you're also fundraising, right?
Yes. We're planning many benefit shows. We just had one at Scully's, thanks to 614 Magazine. We're setting a lot up right now. We don't have any planned, but they will all be posted on our website, www.thedickandjaneproject.org.
TheDickAndJaneProject.org. Ben Shinnaberry, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Good
Enjoy
luck,
the music.
Ben.
Ben is the creator of the Dick and Jane Project here in Columbus. If you want to learn more, DickAndJaneProject.org at WOSU.org/allsides. And Mimi Schoenfeld, as usual, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you,
appreciated
man.
It. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.